Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event. Fight fans worldwide, you've tuned into the number one undisputed boxing podcast today. This is the Boxing Breakdown. Now, your heavy-handed, hard-hitting host, Mark Roxy.
What's up? I am your host, Mark Roxy, and welcome to another edition of the Boxing Breakdown. And I am with none other than my partner in crime, Mr. Harold Hunt. What's up, Harold?
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm good, brother. I'm really good. How are you?
Hey, I'm great, man. Our sport is hot right now.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's hot. You got that right. Hotter than a hot tamale. I mean, man, we got so much good stuff going on in boxing right now. And we've got lots to talk about. So for those of you tuning in, thank you for tuning in to the Boxing Breakdown. I'm your host, Mark Roxy, and I'm here with Mr. Harold Hunt, as I just mentioned. And we are delighted to come to you. If you're listening to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcasts, we really appreciate it. Thanks. And please don't forget to leave a review and a comment and share the podcast. We would love that. And if you're tuning in live right now on YouTube, you can leave your comments. You can participate in this conversation. It's going to be a very, very fruitful conversation. And I know that Harold has lots to talk about. So Harold, what you got? I know you got some news coming off the press. So why don't you share that with me?
Yes, concerning the Jake Paul fight, apparently finances is the number one situation with all involved. The contract was signed for 200. He had to be at 200 pounds. Mr. Rothman, he had to be at 200 pounds. The commission is allowing him to come in at 215 by 12 noon on Friday. If he can come in at 215 on 12 noon on Friday, then Jake Paul will go ahead with the fight. Now, Jake Paul is hoping that this man can drain himself down to 215 and be weak and be a shell of himself where that extra weight won't impact him too much. So he's hoping that he can do the 215. The fight can go off. He can be victorious because if he does win, then he'll be ranked to fight another real fighter.
Wow.
So he needs an opportunity. So at the beginning of the week, we heard that the fight was off, but it's not because the commission is allowing him to come in at 215 and they're going to circumvent the contract that was signed at 200 pounds.
Okay.
Because it needs to happen.
Wow. So how about that? So how do you think that's going to hit them with ticket sales?
Well, they say Jake Paul paid around $1 million to get the Madison Square Garden to book it, type of thing, which is easy money for him.
For sure.
Even if they give away tickets just for optics to have it filled up, make it look good, the money comes with the pay-per-view.
Right.
And that's something that Jake Paul, the commission, and everyone else involved financially does not want to lose. So the commission is stepping forth and offering an alternative of 215.
Okay.
So no matter what, the optics in that arena will look good, even if they have to lower ticket prices. It's about the pay-per-view numbers.
Yeah. All roads do lead to the pay-per-views. It leads to the pocketbook, right? So if it doesn't make dollars, it doesn't make sense, does it, Harold?
No, everybody wants their cut right now. Trust.
Yeah, I mean it's a doggy dog world. It's tough out there in the boxing community, but yeah, I mean that's great news though. At least because I thought, look, when we talked earlier on this week, I thought that what you were telling me was that this fight was going to be, you know, it wasn't going to be happening. And I was thinking, oh man. And you even commented, you said, you know, man, a lot of people are not going to get paid. A lot of people are, you know, it's going to hurt their pocketbooks, you know?
Yeah, that was definitely a narrative. That's what, you know, the press going to report and everything else. Of course, yeah. You know, they have to have a clear understanding for the public to have. But as we go along here and, you know, boxing is in the closet as far as what's really going on. And this is what we're hearing here. So yeah. We're just moving forward with that because Rothman said himself that that fight wasn't necessarily canceled.
Right.
It's just contingencies have been put in place for it to go forward. And it's on him to do the 215 and it's on Jake Paul to accept the 215.
Wow. That's legit. I mean, so what else you got, Harold? What other news has come across? I know there's some news about Cobb, right?
Yes, Blair Cobbs, who has a great mouthpiece. He's flamboyant. He has some knockouts, but he was knocked out pretty badly recently. He is going to fight Maurice Hooker, who is another guy whose defense is somewhat not as pristine as it should be. So they can make a good fight together because they can hit each other. They both got power. Hooker, of course, is a fan-friendly fighter, which was pointed out to me earlier today by, you know, my friends. And I've always liked Blair Cobbs. So that's what's going on with that. So we're looking forward to that. And then you got Ortiz Jr. Fighting Michael Mickelson. Now, that is strangely entertaining. And when I say strange, I mean this. Michael Mickelson is 22-0. With only two knockouts. He is a consummate boxer. Whereas Ortiz is 18-0 with 18 knockouts. So he's going to be coming after Michael, and Michael's got to use his boxing skill not only to win each round, but not to be knocked out. That in itself is going to be an interesting thing. Cat and mouse, you know. But sometimes that mouse, he's a big old rat. And in New York, rats kill cats. So we've got to see how that works.
Yeah, you got that right. So I'm just, yeah, man, I that's interesting. I like Cobb. I think that Cobb is very entertaining, and I like Hooker too. So that sounds like a really great night of boxing. Those two squaring off against each other will be a lot of fun, you know?
I'm surprised there wasn't a big run-up to that as far as the media scene, because Cobbs is very vocal. Hooker is too. Just hadn't seen any footage of their back and forth. But the weigh-in will be there. The weigh-in will be out there, so we get to see that. I was thinking there will be some other things going forward as they get closer to the fight, just because of Blair Cobbs, you know, his ability to sell a fight. So, you know, but in the ring, it's going to be great.
Yeah, man. Well, Harold, thanks for that update. I appreciate the update. I mean, there's there's lots of fights coming down the pike, which we'll talk about at the end of the program. We'll round it out with some discussion on the boxing schedule, and you guys can, you know, look forward to hearing what's coming up. I'm sure you'll be very excited about that. But yeah, so that Jake Paul fight, the Haseem Rahman Jr., that fight was actually going to be a pay-per-view, right, on Showtime, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Man. I don't know how it's been restructured. I haven't heard anything else been restructured where it's going to be on what. I just know about the weight thing has been compromised for the better.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So that's interesting. And then we've got Clarissa Shields, I guess, versus Savannah Marshall on ESPN Plus. That's coming up. Is that coming up?
That's not this weekend, I don't believe.
Right.
If it is, that's going to be a good fight there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll be tuning in. I'm going to start to scan the feeds for that because that's a fight I really want to watch. I want to see
that has a history itself, as you know.
Yeah. Talk to me.
That's the last woman to beat Clarissa. in the amateurs. Now, she's hung her hat on the fact that she was the last one to beat Clarissa. And because of that, she's gotten some financial consideration doing her fights and the run-up. And she's done well, of course. She's a champion. But that was always something that she could bring up in her press conferences and this and that. So in boxing, it's all about talk. So Clarissa is somewhat unnerved, if you will, that she's using that constantly. So she wants to rectify the situation and beat her as a pro. So
yeah,
that's where we are. And I believe it's going to be undisputed. So she'll be undisputed in what, 4 weight classes now or 5, something to that effect. I think it's either 4. I think it's 4 weight classes. She'll be undisputed, which is a huge accomplishment. So I'm looking for her to cash in on the boom in women's boxing. When she wins this, then she can kind of command some numbers that she wants, because the public is paying attention to women's boxing because there's been some great fights recently. And the 2-minute thing is not necessarily something that people talk about anymore, because the fights have been so action-packed. So let's just ride this until, you know, it stalls. I don't believe it will, but it's good for women's boxing.
Absolutely. And you know what? You bring up a great point, some great fights. Speaking of a great fight, right? We were all treated this weekend to an absolutely amazing evening of boxing, rounded out by Danny Garcia versus Jose Benavidez Jr. On this past Saturday, July 30th on Showtime. And, you know, it was an absolute amazing night of boxing. There were other fights on there that were really entertaining, but I really wanted to direct this podcast today on a discussion surrounding, you know, Danny Garcia and Jose Benavidez and how that fight went to, you know, came off. So Harold, you know, what were your initial impressions about the fight?
Well, Garcia went in saying, I'm going to put pressure on him and see if I can get him out.
Right.
So uncharacteristically, he went in there and stood in the pocket and tried to see if he could affect him to the point where he could possibly take him out. When he saw that wasn't going to happen, the guy was a little strong, kind of big or what have you.
Yeah.
He went back to boxing. Now, Danny is a supreme counterpuncher. That is his claim to fame. Mm. So when he couldn't attack and be successful at that, he went back to his bread and butter. But his bread and butter looked really, really good. I mean, his footwork was on point. He was landing nice punches. They were in combinations. They were clean. They just necessarily wasn't rocking Benavidez as he would like. However, they were clean enough for the judge to see. They were clean enough for the public to see that Danny looks really good. I was impressed with his performance, that he went to his bread and butter, but his initial thing was, you know, to see if he can get him out.
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely. If you want to come in, Millie, you can come in. Come on in. Yeah, I got a special guest in the studio here today. So, yeah, she's invading the studio. Well, hello. Welcome to being on the Boxing Breakdown for the first time, Miss Melissa Roxy. It's good to have you here. Obviously, you're collecting your data there. I see what you're doing. So, yeah. Anyway, Harold, this is the first time that I think Melissa's been on the Boxing Breakdown, and what you get is a little bit of her shoulder there, and that's about all we got. Good. So, but anyway, yeah, Harold. So, first of all, let's get into this fight, and let's talk about some of the particulars about the fight. This was a super welterweight 12-round bout, and Danny Garcia won I believe it was a majority decision. Scores were 116 to 112 by Glenn Feldman, 117 to 111 Tony Paolo, And then 114 to 114 by Waleska Woldan. So that was what the scores were. I am not sure where the 114-114 came from, Harold. Talk to me about that.
Well, as you know, there's three sides to the ring where judges are seated. And each of them see different things. Me being a judge myself, and being, I've done some fights that are very, very, whatever, large as far as the crowd is concerned. And,
right.
And you can be swayed by the crowd. Now, I don't believe this judge was swayed by the crowd, anything like that. But the judges saw what they saw.
Yeah.
And from the angle they were at, that's what they believed. That's what they saw. So I can't discount that at all. But I will say that you see a different view from any side of the ring. Mark, you yourself as a judge with amateurs. So you see what you see. Sometimes the referee is moving around and you may miss some things. The referee is doing what he's supposed to do, but you know, humans are humans. You still get in the way. Or a lot of the action may take place somewhere away from that judge. There's so many factors.
Yeah.
114-114 is not negative to me because you see what you see. Where you see it is where you see it. Where the action takes place is what you see. So that judge saw that. And, you know, I don't really think it's disputed.
Yeah.
Any, because me being a judge, I know you can see things differently according to where you sit.
Yeah. No. I mean, Danny Garcia weighed in at 152.75. And Jose Benavidez weighed in, I believe, at 153.75. So they both came in around the same weight. But I think you touched on a really good point there, Harold, that, you know, a lot of people don't realize that. Like when you put the ring in and you've got, you know, judges around the ringside, oftentimes the referee can be in the way in the sight lines for the person that's judging. And the thing is that what I think a lot of the listeners may not know is that when you're judging a boxing match, you may kind of see that a punch was landed on someone, but you didn't see the punch. You may have seen the back of the head, or you may have seen, like, you may have peeked around the referee and you may have just kind of been able to see a glancing blow, but you didn't actually see the blow. Well, the rules state that you can't really score that. You're not supposed to score what you don't see. And that makes for a very interesting way to score bouts, because if you have, you know, three judges around the ring, ringside in the field of play, and each one of them has this ref moving through the space, blocking the view, you're not going to be able to score critical and important blows to a round. And why that's so material, I think, is because, you know, a lot of people you get a score like this where, I mean, I completely disagree with the 114-114, by the way, but I think that it's an example of how the scores can be so critical to the success of a fighter or the loss of a fighter. Because I did think that, Benavidez Jr. did exceptionally well. He had early in the fight, he had wonderful moments where he did an amazing job. He stood toe-to-toe with Danny. Danny was getting the best. His hand speed seemed to be a little faster, and his footwork was impeccable. So I think in the fight, the thing that saved Danny's bacon was that when he finished his exchange, he was often able to evade a counterattack because of the way he was using his leg, his lateral movement, and his feet. And I think if you go back to his last fight, you didn't see that. You saw a very stationary Danny, you know, Garcia. You didn't see the movement. And I wonder, was this an example of him improving his skill sets? Or was it an example of him just being in better shape? Or, I mean, what do you think?
Well, Benavidez did go along with the program, because after he knew he couldn't really get to Danny, couldn't really hurt him.
Yeah.
And he was getting hit on a regular basis and losing the round. He conceded. And you start to concede when you say, oh, you're not hurting me. You're holding your arms out. You're not hurting me.
Right.
I'm walking to you. Look, you know, look, you're hitting me. It's not hurting me. That's concession. So he conceded to Danny maybe, what, the last five rounds? Because he was posturing like, oh, you're not hurting me. You're not hurting me. But right. He was losing each round. Now back to the referee, Benji Estevez, who's a great referee.
Oh, yeah, one of the best.
He told me one time, we were talking before a fight, and he said he makes sure that he gets out of the way in front of the three judges.
Yeah.
He says he looks and see, he knows where they are, and he never is stationary because he wants the judges to be able to see everything. So not only is he watching the fight, I mean, the fighters and making sure they're safe, he's getting out of the way purposely so the judges can see everything. And he said that's a discipline that he incorporated maybe, you know, during his career. And now he's perfected to the point where if you were to go back and watch a fight he's done recently, you'll notice that he is constantly circling. And he is in a position where he lets all the judges see everything. He is never a deterrent of that.
Right.
And that discipline took years to develop. But we talked about that. He told me about that. And that's exactly what would happen. And so I don't know who this referee was. I'm not saying he didn't do that. I'm sure he had that discipline also. But that is one discipline that some referees tend to take. And Benny pointed it out to me.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, you're absolutely right. Moving from side to side laterally as a referee is really, really important, and not standing in one spot because, you know, granted, you're going to miss, as a judge, you're going to miss certain shots. You're going to miss things, right? Just because of the way they're rotating, there's three people in the ring, etc. But if you have a referee that is accomplished and knows how to navigate that ring, it certainly makes for a more fair and impartial judging of the fight. And I think that's why you see sometimes at the highest level, some of these fighters really in the contracts, really looking to make sure that they get the right referee for the fight. It's not just because they're impartial, but it's also because they know how to move. They know how to navigate the ring in a way that benefits, you know, said fighter. Side A or B or whatever, however you want to, characterize that. But, you know, I think what should be noted here for those of you tuning in, right, is that Danny Garcia was out of the ring for 2 years, almost two years. So you would assume that there was a little bit of ring rust coming back. I don't know. I mean, what was your feeling? And if you're joining us on YouTube, please leave your comments and just chat, jump in on the chat. Here you go. We'll see what you have to say.
I think he knocked it off really nicely. I mean, the first fight back, he may have been kind of stationary.
Yeah.
But this fight, he looked really good when he went to his bread and butter. He moved well. He countered well. He got out of the way. He was very comfortable.
Right.
And that in itself is a great accomplishment for the 2 years off. And after his first comeback fight, which was a different shape, he was in a different shape where he had to be more stationary. But he was able to attack and he was able to move and his footwork was great. And, you know, he's a great counterpuncher. He is.
Yeah. No. He definitely showed that. There's not much you can say about the way that he conducted himself in the ring. It was certainly a valiant performance. I mean, as far as the audience is concerned, I think they had a great time. Everybody I spoke to, everybody kept saying, yeah, man, this was great. This was one of the best fights I've seen. And so, yeah. I mean, what do you think about the post press conference? Or actually, let's talk about what happened directly after the fight. right? So Danny gets his hand raised, press conference happens, and Danny Garcia opens up in front of a packed arena at the Barclays Center and shares with everyone there and the millions watching on TV that he's been struggling with depression and anxiety and, you know, having some issues there. And so what was your feeling about that?
First of all, I thought it was courageous. And the fact that other athletes have kind of opened that door and expressed their situation. Ryan Garcia before him, the gymnast before him, before
her. Right, Michelle Biles, right?
Yes. Yeah. And one of the commentators, Renato Moraldo, if I pronounce his name correctly, forgive me. He's an advocate of that. So now it's acceptable in society because so many people understand that it's not a negative situation. Now with him, you would say, well, why are you like that? You have millions of dollars, your picture jumping off your yacht
right
into the ocean. What do you have to be depressed about? And people need to understand it's not about money. It's not about certain things. It's just a situation that happens in your life that will cause you to have that kind of issue. Now, the fact that he had an outlet with the boxing and he had his father there and he went through these things, moneyed or not.
Yeah.
This was an opportunity for him to help heal himself. And I thought that was admirable that he was able to let the public know that that's what he was dealing with.
Yeah, I have to concur with you. I think it's always valiant when anyone comes out and asks for help. You know, I think that an important lesson that we should all take away from last Saturday is that, you know, athletes do have a platform, whether they like it or not, whether they want to be a role model or not, whether they want to bring to light causes utilizing that role, that capacity, you know, it's an option. But Danny Garcia took that moment to really share with the world what he's been going through. And I've been talking to a lot of people in the sport and I've been having conversations around this topic. And some of the things that have surfaced are, you know, obviously mental health is critical. We need more prevention. We need more care for mental health in this country. We have to be able to identify when someone is having difficulty early on in the process and get them the help that they need, right? So that being said, one of the questions that came up was this an example of a fighter having, you know, obviously having mental health issues out of the ring in preparation for this fight? Or was this mental health issue just being depressed from losing a fight at 147, a major fight that would have cast him as the best in the division? Is this an example of, you know, what every fighter goes through? Does every fighter go through depression when they lose a fight? What are your feelings about that? Because, yeah.
Well, I've talked to fighters who have lost for the first time. And a part of boxing is getting two undefeated fighters in there who don't know how to lose, who've never had that crushing mental anguish of losing. And when they are fighting, that is a driving force. I don't want to lose. I've never lost. I don't know how to lose. And that is a part of a really good match. It's a mental thing. Now, with Danny, when he did lose badly. His stock went up every time he lost because he gave those guys great fights. He was landing cleanly. on points. He wasn't rocked, he wasn't hurt or anything, and he landed his share of punches on his in his three losses. So from the public standpoint, we may not see a reason for him to be depressed because he wasn't knocked out, he wasn't whitewashed, he wasn't dominated. In his mind, it may have been different. I don't know. I don't know if it was the actual losses. Mm. It could have been something else that happened in his family. We just don't know what right. would trigger that.
Right. Well, again, I think that there's something here that's it's bigger. This is bigger than Danny Garcia. This is bigger than us. It's bigger than any one individual. What this is really about is what I'm suggesting is that we as a sport need to take a moment. Excuse me. And look into what is happening with our athletes before, during, and after a bout. And how does mental health, where's the line being drawn between mental health issues and mental health care for a fighter, right? So we know that fighters lose in the gym. Sometimes fighters have awful days in the gym or they're in sparring. They haven't been knocked out ever in their career, and then all of a sudden they get knocked out in sparring. It's not even in a fight. It's in sparring. And it transforms that fighter forever, right? And there's a mental health issue there. There's mental health issues around possibly losing, carrying the burden of possibly, I'm going to possibly lose. Eventually, I'm going to lose. There's a lot here. And I wonder what we can do as a sport to kind of intercede in this and combat some of it. Because, you know, Danny Garcia, as you say, this isn't about money. This isn't about fame. This isn't about any of that. And we're seeing it. We saw it with Ryan Garcia, right? We saw it with, we see Danny Garcia. You see it with Deontay Wilder. I mean, this is not new. And it's happening on every level of our sport. So I guess what I'm saying is we should be doing something about this and something about prevention, something about dealing with the rigors of being a professional athlete and how to manage that. Because I don't think that Danny or any of these other top upper echelon fighters, I don't think Tank is getting any kind of mental health assistance or Teofimo Lopez for that matter, which we all need. We all need as we endeavor in this amazing sport, but it's a very tough sport. And I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, as you know, it's a special type of person to be a fighter. I don't have that in me.
Right.
I recognize and appreciate those who do.
Yeah.
That's one thing. The second thing is they are to be respected. Even a fighter who has a terrible record is still a special person.
As oh, we yeah, all are, but absolutely.
That is still something that needs to be applauded. The second thing is boxing is so crazy over the no losses.
Right.
No losses. And that is such a mental crushing thing when you lose that. Now, if the narrative is, hey, if you lose, you just come back stronger. Now, of course, you heard fighters say it all the time. I'm sure these mental issues have been around in boxing forever. It just right. wasn't addressed. You would be weak if you said you had any kind of problem like that.
Yeah.
And therefore, it was taboo. But because of our society now, people are going to come out and say that. He's not going to be the last fighter who's going to feel free enough to say this because he's opening the door for others
right.
in other sports and boxing to say, hey, you know, it's a kind of a mental thing. Me, at my level or whatever I understand, if they could kind of take the heat of losing your O off these fighters when they're coming up, amateurs and pro, that when they do lose a fight, it's not the crushing thing. We've seen people retire for a year, 2 years when they lose a fight or yeah. when they're knocked out.
That's right.
And they it takes years for them to get over that shock because their entire life, they thought, I would never lose. I would never be knocked out. And when it happens, it's such a crushing a situation that they're never the same. That's because that narrative has been put into them since they were children. Do not ever lose. And if you do, you let down the world, yourself, and everyone else.
Right.
So if that narrative can be changed initially in the minds of these fighters, if they have a form in which they could speak on this type of thing, it could be helpful.
Right. Well, you know, one thing we should talk about here, right, is Danny Garcia defended that title, his title. He's a two-time world champion, right? He's defended the title over 10 times, right? So he's been at this for a long time. I mean, he's got Sean Porter, Keith Thurman, and Errol Spence on his record, okay? He has fought some very, very good opposition. In fact, if you go back to his last five fights, from the one that was the furthest away to the newest one, you have Keith Thurman, Brandon Rios, Sean Porter, Adrian Grandos, Ivan Redback, Errol Spence, and now Jose Benavidez, right? So you basically have a guy who's really stepped up and fought great opposition. And, you know, he's been moderately successful. He's actually at a 50, he's at 50-50, right? So he's got 50 of those fights I just mentioned he lost, and 50% of those fights he actually won. So he got a split decision loss to Keith Thurman. He TKO'd Brandon Rios. He got a unanimous decision loss against Sean Porter. Adrian Grandos, he TKO'd. He got a unanimous decision win over Ivan Redback, and he got a unanimous decision loss against Errol Spence. So, you know, and now he's got a win again over Jose Benavidez Jr. So he's got, it's interesting.
Moving up, and he's never been really rocked or hurt or staggered. He's been hit where it changes his momentum going forward. But he's never been hurt, and he's never been rocked, and he's never been flailing or stepping in potholes, none of that, ever.
Yeah, well, I will tell you this, okay? Against his fight with Jose Benavidez the other night, he hit Jose Benavidez with everything but the kitchen sink. I mean, he hit him flush, clean, beautiful, beautiful combinations at times. And those shots did not do damage to what is, you know, really a smaller fighter, taller, but a, you know, fighting at a lower weight class coming up as well. Danny's at 154. He's not fighting at 147 right now. Do you think he should go back to 147? Do you think he should stay at 154?
Well, 154 has a lot of young, strong guys. And 154... he could be taking the chance of being a gatekeeper type thing. I don't know if he could reach the top of the division and be a real player. He has opportunities to fight for a WBA title, which is not the full title, but the second title, right, similar to what Tank has.
Right.
Which will be good for him to have. It's easily marketed by the WBA, and the rest of the world says he is a champion at the 154. And really, people don't really understand that is a minor belt, really. So it'll be marketable on all the networks and all the promoters, and he has the opportunity to do that. They will put him right in there, and he can win that belt.
Right.
So that's opportunity. But if he goes the WBC route, the IBF route, or WBO route, it's going to be a little difficult for him to do that because their belts are either champion or you're not.
Right.
There's no interim. Well, there is, but, you know, they're not really recognized like the WBA's number two belt is really recognized along with their major belt.
Right. So let's take a look, right? Let's take a quick look here at the pound for pound fighters in the top 10. Pound for pound. Okay, we'll start there and then we'll get down into the 147s. But you got Naoya Inoue as number one, bantamweight. Oleksandr Usyk as number two, pound for pound. Terrence Crawford ranks in pound for pound three. Errol Spence comes in down at four. Saul Canelo Alvarez is right around five. Tyson Fury, bring him in at six. Roman Gonzalez at seven. Demetrius Bivol at eight. Jermall Charlo at nine. And Arthur Beterbiev at 10. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, Charlo needs to be higher because he's demonstrated that he does have the defense and he does have the offense and he improves each time he's out there.
Yeah.
So I've got to give him a little higher stance in that.
Okay. Well, yeah, if you're out there.
Canelo was there. Yeah.
I was just going to say.
There because of his pedigree and his past and what he's done. So he's kind of given a pass, if you will.
Right.
Yes, he's in the top 10, but not that high, in my opinion, at this point. some of my boxing judge friends locally, they have definitely pointed out that he's not all that. And I went back and forth with them. But then I saw exactly what they were speaking of in the past two fights. I get it. I didn't get it before, and I get it now. I'm not disparaging him, but he's in the top 10. That's it.
Well, you got to talk about it, Harold. You got to talk about this stuff. You know, I mean, we're looking at if we go to 154, super welterweight, junior middleweight, in some sanctioning bodies, you've got Jermall Charlo carrying the and Sebastian Fonduro carrying the WBC belts, right? You got in the WBA, you got Jermall Charlo, IBF, you got Jermall Charlo, and the WBO, you got Jermall Charlo. Right, that's at super welterweight 154. Danny Garcia's right down at five by the WBC, and I think he might be at nine at the WBA. Right, so he's not. You know, I don't think he's ranked at all with the IBF or the WBO at this particular point at the time of this podcast. He's not necessarily ranked, but you know, I'm just looking at the guys that are there. What do you think his rationale is for coming up to 154?
Well, some people say he's trying to avoid the 147 people. I think that he did his work down there. He's lost to only the best fighters there.
Yeah.
And he wants to come in at a more comfortable weight for him.
Yeah.
If he doesn't have to bang these guys out and he can win on points, so be it. Floyd did that. Whitaker did that, and they still were very successful.
Right.
The crowds and the fans still enjoyed him. And if he can prolong his career by being a sharp counterpuncher and give us the nice optics, because if you look all across, you see clean punches that he landed on being a beast on all the networks, on all the podcasts, on everything.
Right.
So if you're seeing clean punches and he's doing this over and over again, he may not be knocking these guys out, but it's good to see clean punches. If he can do this consistently, he can fight another 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Right.
Actually.
Right. Well, Harold, you know, I mean, you bring up a really good point. Some people, you know, you commented on the fact that some people think he's moving up to avoid some of the guys down at 147. I'm not sure that that's the case. I don't know what Danny Garcia's rationale and the team's rationale is for what they're doing. But what I can tell you is that in that weight class at 147, you've got Keith Thurman, right? You've got Virgil Ortiz. You've got Jaron Boutenis. I mean, Connor Bean is there. There's some tough opposition right there at that level. So, you know, I mean, I could go on with some of the guys that are in that division, but it is a kind of rough and tumble division at 147. So maybe what he's thinking is, let me get out of that division for a little bit, go up and maybe come back down. Cause I'd love to see him fight Keith Thurman. There's been talk about like he wants Keith Thurman. Maybe he wants another fight with Errol Spence. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I'm not saying he's running from a division. He's already fought the best in the division. So he has nothing to prove there. He doesn't necessarily get in with Boots because Boots are on his way up and he's still at the top. So he has, it's no need for that. There really is no need. If he wants to get one at Keith Thurman, maybe they can have a catch weight.
Yeah.
Something like that. He necessarily doesn't want to fight Spence again. It just doesn't make sense right now for him to do that.
For who? So, for him or for Spence?
No, well, for Spence to do that right now. It's just no, he's a fallback for him to go back with Garcia again. Right. So, you know, the cards have to be a certain way for that to happen.
Right.
So I don't think that is a situation that is going to be something that he would need to do. At 54, as we said, he's older. It's easier for him to come and wait.
Right.
He can box and he can beat most of those guys.
Yeah.
And so why not? And he has opportunity to get to win one of the major belts again.
Yeah. You make him three-time world champion, right?
He sells tickets.
So
his father is colorful. he is someone that is, you know.
All right. So let's have the conversation that nobody wants to have. The big elephant in the room. Okay.
And what is that, pray tell?
He's gonna jump off against Jermall Charlo. What do you think about that fight?
Well, that will sell tickets.
Yeah,
the verbiage and all that will sell tickets. It will be back and forth what's going to happen. What I see is if he goes to the counter-punching situation, Charlo knows how to come forward and score,
yeah,
even though he's being counterpunched. Mm-hmm. If he attacks Charlo is he's well versed in going backwards also in scoring.
Right.
So I would have to go with Charlo just because he's versatile like that. He can go forward and take you. He can go backwards and take you.
Right.
Okay. Whereas Garcia at this weight, it's not going to be necessary to exact the kind of power to take you out. So he must fight a counter-punching style. In a fight that goes 12 rounds, I just will see Charlo will win the rounds because he's not necessarily going to be hurt and he can go either style to win the round. I see a decision for Charlo if they fight, but it will be a good fight. The run-up will be good and the press will be good for it also.
So I think that's an interesting point. So like I'm asking, why would he want to be at 154? Why? What what could he hope to accomplish at 154? He's ranked number 5 by the WBC. So is he going after the green and gold? Is that what he's doing?
Well, if Charlo slips up, which I don't see him doing anytime, Charlo may give up some of those belts because he's tired of paying those high fees.
Well, he would unify if he fights Jermall Charlo, God, that would be great. Because then what he would do is he'd fight for all four belts. Because Charlo's got all four belts. So Danny, maybe that's the rationale, guys. Maybe what's happening, everyone, right? Maybe what he's trying to do is he's trying to unify at 154.
Yeah. Well, Charlo has so many other options, easy money,
right. Easy
legacy adding fights that he can take way before this, where he can be undisputed for 3-4 fights
right. Before
he even entertains Danny.
Right.
Meanwhile, Danny's got a fight somewhere in there,
yep. And
he could possibly take a loss or not.
Yep.
But he's going to have to fight. He's going to have to take his chances while Charlo runs through these other boys easily.
Right.
So he's 4 fights away from Charlo. And then Charlo may get to the point where I am tired of paying these sanctioning fees. The world knows I'm the undisputed. I'm already undisputed.
Right.
Some of these fighters, once they get undisputed in one weight class, they'll drop it and go to another weight class, as Crawford did, as other people do. Okay, I'm undisputed. I'm in the history books. I want to move to a weight class. I'll drop all the belts. Remember, Floyd dropped some belts,
right?
You know, so the other guys could get to him. But in the history books, he got what he got. So we never know what the psyche is going to be, how Charlo wants to do it, if he wants to continue to hold those four belts, pay the sanctioning fees, or hang his fat hat on that I am undisputed. I have been undisputed. I proved that.
Right.
I'm going to do other things. So we just don't know how it's going to work out.
Right. I think there's an argument that Jermall Charlo would want to go up to 160. There's some meet up at 160 for him.
He claims his brother is there and he would never do that.
What but about 168?
Kliskos did that. They were both heavyweights. They never touched each other.
Right.
They had held separate belts, and they did that. They did that, and there was no clamor for them to fight each other. Nothing. And one was the WBO champion. The other one had the other two, and back and forth. And that's what they did. So
yeah,
there's a situation for that.
Yeah. Well, I mean. Oh, we didn't mention on Saturday night that we had someone who's been on the podcast multiple times, Mr. Billy Briscoe, renowned cutman and trainer himself, good friend of mine, was working the corner for Danny, and he did an absolutely amazing job keeping a swelling down on that eye. And so it was a good day when you've got Billy Briscoe with you in the corner. So hats off to a really consummate professional. And a real good friend of mine. So congratulations, Billy. It was great to see you up there doing your thing, man. And
good work, dude.
Yeah, right? I mean, I just, I love Danny Garcia at 147. I love Danny Garcia at 147, Harold. And folks, yeah, man, I would love to see another Keith Thurman fight. I don't mind that. I could see that, you know, those two guys rumbling in the ring together. You know, I mean, I don't really want to see Danny fight. I mean, look, do you remember when we did a podcast? This was about 2 years ago, Harold, or a year ago or something. We did a podcast and we were talking about fantasy boxing and which matches we would want to see if we could pick any match that we would want to see. Do you remember that podcast that we did? And I said that the fight that I always wanted to see was, Larry Holmes and, what was his name? Gosh, it just slipped my head. Hamburgers, big guy. George Foreman. Sorry, man. I'm sorry, George Foreman. I'm sorry. Shouldn't have said hamburger guy, but you know, the Reverend. George Foreman.
Okay. In their primes. Right?
In their primes. It never happened. It was my fantasy match. I would have loved to see Larry Holmes against George Foreman. That would have been an amazing fight, right? But another fight that I've always wanted to see, I don't know if it'll ever be made, but I would love to see it. It looks like it could line up here. And anybody who's a promoter, if you could make this fight happen, you would be the Don Dada of boxing, okay? If you could get Danny Garcia and Jerron Ennis to lock horns in Philadelphia, that would be a mega fight. You might even have to rent an arena for that one because everybody would come out for that fight. And it could happen. That fight could happen. If you look at the lineup at 147, that fight could definitely happen if Danny were to come down.
It's a lost loss for Danny Garcia.
Yeah.
Not saying he'll lose the fight. It's just that Boots will be making his bones on Garcia.
You mean financially?
His reputation.
Oh, okay. All right.
Even if Boots wins by decision, or even if Danny wins by decision,
right,
Boots is going to benefit.
Yeah.
Because he's fighting a real guy, a Philadelphia guy. And because of that, he'll have the opportunity to really boost his image.
Yeah. Well, this was the first fight for Danny Garcia at 154. I don't know if his true knockout power, that left hook, translates up to 154. I'm not sure yet. Maybe we'll see in the next fight. If he has another fight pretty soon, we'll get to learn if he can develop himself to have the power at 154, you know?
I don't see it. I see him doing, I love Floyd's situation, Pretty Boy and Money.
Yeah.
Money was different from Pretty Boy. Pretty Boy knocked people out. Money won on his skill. yet he still had enough punch to keep you off of him. You knew you could possibly get put right. out, but you didn't get in there with him, and he was able to win another 15, 20 fights with that style. I see Danny doing that same thing, only because his footwork and his counterpunching was so nice his last fight. Yeah. I see him being successful at 154, yeah. and he can come in at a better weight. He's already made his money. He doesn't need to necessarily be down there with them. A fight with Boots Ennis would simply be an ego thing.
Right.
And he doesn't even need that. He doesn't need that. Stay at 154, get what you're going to get, enjoy yourself there, and then see how far you can go there. I wouldn't go back down to 47 for nothing. I would fight Keith at a catch weight, and that'd be that.
Right, right. No, I get that, Harold. Well, listen, I want to, I don't know why that graphic is up like that, but that shouldn't have been up all that time. Thanks for telling me. Thanks, guys. Thanks for chiming in on our broadcast and telling me that that graphic was up all that time. I was sleeping over here and put up some good graphics here for us. And then also, I think it's about time for me to hit the upcoming boxing schedule, Harold. What you think?
Yes, let's do it because there's some good stuff. I thought it was kind of slow, but it is not.
No, it is not. It is not, Harold. So, well, let's take a stab at this, okay? We've got a featherweight fight coming up on August 6th. Michael Conlan versus Miguel Mariaga. That fight is going to be in Ireland, in Belfast, on ESPN. Check it out. August 6th, Virgil Ortiz versus Michael McKinson. 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time on DAZN, and that's going to be in Dickies Arena in Fort Worth, Texas. We got Dalton Smith versus Sam O'Mason. Check your local listings for that, but it is going to be on DAZN. We've got a big fight coming up, my boy Teofimo Lopez versus Carlos Campa, and that's going to be 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time on ESPN, and that's going to be taking place at Resorts World Las Vegas. Then we got Oleksandr Usyk versus Anthony Joshua, Sky Sports. That's going to take place in Saudi Arabia. Check your local listings. August 20th, people. August 20th, okay? Another fight on August 20th, WBO featherweight title on the line when Emmanuel Navarrete faces Eduardo Baez. That's going to be on ESPN, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And Adrian the Problem Brona is back in the ring versus Omar Figueroa on August 20th, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Showtime at the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood, California. We got Jose Pedraza, who's back in the ring after a little couple months out of the ring against Richard Comey. That's going to be a great fight. That's a junior welterweight bout, and that'll be on ESPN, taking place at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And then we've got Liam Smith versus Hassan Myquiano. And that's on September 3rd, junior middleweight title fight on the line. Yeah, check your local listings for that one. And then September, man, it's a run-on sentence here, bro. September 4th, Andy Ruiz versus Luis Ortiz, King Kong. That's at the Crypto.com Arena in Los Angeles, 10 o'clock. Eastern Standard Time, 7 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and that is Sunday, September 4th. We go on. Clarissa Shields, the ladies will square off against Savannah Marshall. They've got history. They've got some bad blood going. Check your local listings, ESPN and Sky Sports at the O2 Arena in London. September 17th, Canelo Alvarez versus Gennady Golovkin. That is the one that I'm waiting for. That is the one that I'm waiting for. That's on DAZN at the T-Mobile Arena, Las Vegas, Nevada, September 17th. Check your local listings. And lastly, we've got Shakur Stevenson versus Robson Conseco, September 23rd, ESPN, Prudential Center in his hometown of Newark, New Jersey, Rise Up. There we go, Harold. That's the calendar till September 23rd.
Yeah, that calendar looks good. I don't see any upsets, but they will happen.
Yeah. So
that is what's exciting about boxing, because you have your favorites and then you have some upsets, and those are what you look for. You look for things that are uncharacteristic. So
yeah,
we're going to see.
Yeah, Harold. Well, listen, we rounded out just about an hour. Thank you for being with us. If you've been joining us on, you know, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all those great podcast platforms, thank you for being with us. Subscribe, like, if you're on YouTube, hit the notification so you know when we're going live. We're building, 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 Harold. We are doing it, man. We are building. So I'm pumped about it. And yeah, and I guess it's that time. It's that time to say goodbye. And until next time, peace and love. On behalf of Harold Hunt, I am Mark Roxy, your host of the Boxing Breakdown. We'll see you next time on the next edition.
Good night.
Good night, y'all.
Fight fans, join host Mark Roxy and special guests as they break down all aspects of the boxing world, including news, business, management, training, promotions, fan reactions, upcoming events, matchups, future boxing stars, title fights, state of the boxing world, and all the stuff you don't see when you watch boxing. This podcast is released each week on Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Live streamed on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook Live. It's the Boxing Breakdown, hosted by Mark Roxy.